Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Stocks are up, gold's up, silver's up, bonds are up, the case count is up, Fed balance sheet is up, deaths are up, unemployment is up, everything is up, up, up. Oh, except trading volume. And a look at the best kind of bear market. All this and much more on episode number 671 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hello to all you disciplined investors. I'm Andrew Horowitz and hope you're having the best summer that you can have, possibly considering all of the crazy, all that's going on that is, dare I say, unusual. So we're now into July. We're in the middle of the month of July. And who would have thought the virus would still be raging on? I mean, was there any indication back in March or April that this thing was going to go this far? I mean, we thought we were going to get done with this in May. This is all be behind us by now. It's going to be the rearview mirror. I mean, this was over, done with. Let's move on. Economy's going to reopen. But instead, we are here today quibbling over mask mandates, reopenings, school closures. And I mean, we've gone from bad to worse. From where we were in, let's say, in April and May to where we are now is really terrible. Here, I'm in Florida. I mean, we are in bad shape. I mean, I would probably go so far as saying that if things progress the way that they have been over the last several weeks, we are going to be right there where New York was at the height of their problem. Now, so far, so good. We have a lot less deaths. That's good news. The positivity rate is up. Yes, the virus count rate in the new cases is up. But the problem is that there are talks about rollbacks in various places. I mean, if you saw what's going on in Texas, it's really just horrible with what's happening, the new death rate that's going on there. I know there's a lot of confusion, a lot of controversy about this, but nonetheless, it's just not a good situation. Let's all agree to that. It's not. And it's going to potentially have an impact on the economy. There's already clear signs that the economy is not picking up the speed that we were from the rebound that we saw in May and June. And that makes sense when we have the case count rising. I mean, we hit 75,000 in overnight U.S. cases, 240,000 in the world. And there's one thing that kind of, I don't know, I'm a little bit questioning about these numbers. I'm skeptical because I was wondering what happens when someone goes and actually takes a test. And let's say they go a few weeks back and they get a positive result. And then they go back the week after to see what's happening. They get another positive result. And then they go back another week after that and they get another positive result. And then finally they do it another week and they get a negative result. Well, so therefore, if we think about how that worked out, that was 3 positive results, 1 negative. Does that mean that the count is going to be continually for the positive rate, going to count 3 for the total? Or are they counting individual and unique people for their case count? I don't think so. What I think they're doing is counting total positive results. And if I'm negative, what happens with the case count there? Is it wiped out? Is it on the recovery? So when you have a person that goes in, I don't know, the whole thing is just very confusing, to be honest with you. And I wonder if you kind of really extrapolate this out, if this is correct, that is it possible that a state will have more positive counts in the future than they would overall people in the population of the state? I mean, it's kind of weird. So it's really confusing on the case count and, I think it's just something to think about. And as we are all panicking about these numbers rising. Maybe there's something to be said about the fact that there's double counting going on some of this. Now, whether or not, I don't know, probably a lot of you are buzzing right now. Oh, it's the Democrats. Oh, it's the Republicans. Forget about it. It doesn't matter whether it's going to be the independents, the communists, the independents related to, or the Republicans, or the, I don't really care. It's not the point here. I know that gets into some people's minds. They got to think everything is politics. And they're like, yeah, everything is politics. No, everything is not politics. But let's just go on from here, okay? I don't want to get in the weeds on this because the bottom line is there's definitely a problem. There's no question the trajectory of the virus in the world and in the U.S. is problematic. And this is going to affect corporate profitability. That's what we're talking about here. This is not the disciplined politician show. It's the disciplined investor show. It's not the disciplined virus show. It is the disciplined investor show. And we're talking about investments. We're talking about, you know, what it means to the markets, to our portfolios. And one of the things has really caught on pretty dramatically. I got to tell you, this is pretty cool. I started talking about this probably about 5 weeks ago or so. And I talked about the whole idea of this 1 foot in and 1 foot out concept of, hey, you know what? A lot of people are thinking that they don't want to really be invested, but yet at the same time, oh, but look at that market go. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to wait for the drop. I'm going to wait for this to fall down. And there is some logic that I could ascribe to for that. And I could say, you know what? That makes sense. The valuations are a little bit wonky. Things are a little bit crazy. So yes, what we should do is think about how there is the opportunity to wait it out. Things will come down. However, what if you're wrong? That's the one thing that goes through everybody's mind all the time. What if you're wrong? What if, in fact, the markets just continually go higher? And put that aside for a second. Let's just hold that. And what's your goal anyway? So listen, this 1 foot out, 1 foot in, or 1 foot in, 1 foot out, however you want to describe it, dollar cost averaging in and multitude of ways of getting into the market. Or one of the things we're also doing is saying, okay, if you don't want to really be in the market, but you want to be invested and have the opportunity, at least ready, set, go, well, what you can do is have a much lower level of overall risk in your portfolio right now. And what that does for you is it gives you the opportunity to be invested, to be in there, to be in the game, because you can't win a game if you're not in it, right? And if the market comes down a little bit, what you do then is shift your portfolio more aggressively. But at least you're set to go. Otherwise, what you're going to do is pretty much sit on the sidelines and hope for the best. And that's just not a plan and not going to work out, especially if you have a 20 or 30-year time horizon. If you have a 30-year time horizon, what are you thinking that you're going to market time and then what? Don't you think there's going to be another market crash sometime in the future? Don't you think there's going to be another rally sometime in the future? And you're okay with that, but just not the one right now. So think about the 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Again, a lot of people have been calling me about this. Like, you know, that makes a lot of sense. So thanks a lot for all the people that have been commenting on that. I think that's really good. We talked about this in the last several shows, so you really should listen to this. Now, in terms of what happened last week, I think it was really interesting, and we're going to see a little bit of this going forward into next week as well. We had a lot of hope put on the idea that there is going to be some kind of maybe a vaccine. Moderna came out with some report on Monday. It was put into the New England Journal of Medicine. I read it, and it was interesting. It was really good results. All the subjects created antibodies. That was good. Again, I'm an amateur epidemiologist at best. Not even at best. Not even an amateur. Less than that. But I guess we all had to come up with some kind of understanding of what all this means because we're totally wrapped in this whole thing for a long time now. So the results seem to be very good. That was confirmed by a lot of other articles that came out. It was a very small study, though. This is the second time that we've seen results from Moderna. I think there was 35 patients that were put through this study. That is minuscule. All of them, 100% of them, did produce these antibodies. That's good. But it's a small study. I'd like to see this run on a lot more subjects. Now, markets liked it. Monday, the markets really did well. It was a hopeful sign. We saw the cruise lines, the airlines, hotels, all the leisure stocks. got an incredible boost. I mean, the Norwegian Cruise Lines and Carnival and Royal were up like, what were they up? It's close to 20% on Monday. Fell down a little bit on Tuesday, and when the no sale policy came out again and extended it into September of 2020, I think that was a little bit of a surprise. There was definitely something there that did, in fact, surprise the markets. And the expectation was that they would possibly be able to sell a little bit sooner, but nope. So markets took it back, some of the money that they pushed into them over that nice day. But one of the things that I wanted to share with you was something that was disturbing. And I'm not sure what to make of it yet, but it was disturbing about the Moderna information. And that was the same thing that happened last time. That after they came out with a really good report, a day later, there was a major amount of shareholder selling from the insiders that took place. And that was a real problem. Because if in fact they have, remember something, Moderna has never put out, they have never put out a vaccine or product, anything, nothing, zero. So now there's a lot riding on this idea that they have some kind of vaccine that will be really beneficial. And okay, I'm okay with that. I'm good with that. Let's fine. That's great. They went through the studies. There was some antibodies created. All good. Small group. Okay. Questionable. But why is this company, why are the directors, before they come out with a virus and a known way of producing this and distributing this, selling shares? The day after. Now, yes, it was scheduled. There was a scheduled process of shares of selling, and there's something that they have. But you have to wonder, the timing of this is really weird. Not only is the timing of this weird, it's the second time. It's the second time that the timing of shares by insiders was the day after they came up with some kind of really good news. Kind of makes you want to say, what's up with that? Now, it's still, I mean, Moderna hit an all-time high on Friday, which is great. But you have to wonder if there's going to be anybody looking into what's going on with this company. It just seems a little squishy. You know, a little bit concerning in terms of what exactly they, you know, what's going on with their thought process. Now, on Monday, this week coming up, so that's going to be on the, what is that, the 20th of July. We are going to see another study, AstraZeneca, who has also been really vocal about their results, very much like Moderna. They've very much been talking about this and talking about this and talking about this. Now, maybe that means that there's something very positive coming out. The stock was up very nicely. Also, AZN is the symbol there. And they're going to release the study, which had a much bigger group and was done in a bit of a different manner. I think they're a little bit further through the process. I think they're in second and third phase study on this. This is going to be a much more important result as they're further along in the human trials. And also, there's something about the way that their drug works. There may be a booster, or their vaccine, there may be a booster that is built in. So that would theoretically protect you a lot longer. Because one of the conversations that keeps on coming up is how long do these antibodies last? That's a big issue for the economy. That's tremendous. Think about this. If we want the opportunity to be able to feel good about going out and not having to worry about getting a new vaccine every 30 days, let's say, or whatever time period it is until this thing wears off, and the vulnerability of where we are in terms of our own personal health and own personal security, well, we want something that's going to last a long period of time. And if the antibodies don't stay, whether or not you've gotten the COVID-19 or you got a vaccine and those antibodies are in your body and your body knows how to protect you against them in the future, because this is going to be out there. This virus is out there, just like all other viruses. But we have natural protection from some of them because our body remembers. So there are all these viruses really that are swirling around, but you're not getting necessarily infected because your body has built up an immunity to them. That's the whole point here. Developing immunity to these viruses is something that's really important. So Monday, watch for AstraZeneca. That could be very interesting for the markets, either on a positive or a negative note. We'll have to see how that goes. I mean, there's only so far that we can go with this whole idea of a vaccine, because we need to see this, you know, really not only work, but then produced, distributed. There's going to be a lot of people that say, you know what, I don't want the vaccine. I'm not doing it. I'm not taking a vaccine because all the reasons. The same people that are not wearing masks, you know, whatever. There are those people out there that don't want to wear masks. They don't want to be forced to do something. It's all those people that say, no, vaccines are really bad for me. I don't know, whatever the reason is. So there's reasons for other people saying, you know what, I do want to take the vaccine because if it works, well, then I'm going to have immunity and, you know, hopefully protect all the people around me as well. Again, big debate on all of this. Doesn't matter what your side is on this, because the point is, it's all about, again, what are we talking about? The markets and how the markets react. We need to have some kind of immunity for the ability to continue on these phased reopenings and thereby getting this economy fully back open in the world, a safe place to travel. It's all interrelated. And if you don't think that, you know, you really need to kind of go back to square one and really figure out what it is that I'm thinking about this. And you know, is it more of a just don't tell me what to do concept? We you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, the fact is, from a market standpoint, you know what? It'd probably be good if everybody wore masks. From a market standpoint, whether, you know, you think it works 10%, 20%, probably could be a good idea if we get a vaccine. Some kind of immunity. Just makes common sense, doesn't it? Again, I'm not going to debate this with you. I'm talking about market reaction and what we need to do. We need to make sure that there is no more bankruptcies, companies going under, unemployment subsides or employment. We get people back to work, because that is the heart of our economic engine, is individuals. We saw 1.3 million more people go for the initial unemployment claims on Thursday. That is not a good trend. The fact that these reopenings are kind of being pushed back, not a good trend. And while the markets are signaling that they don't care, because the hope is we're going to have new stimulus and into an election year, I would pretty much bet everything I had that, yeah, we're going to have some more stimulus. Question is, how effective is it going to be? What area is it going to be? Who is going to be really benefiting from this? The bottom line is that $600 per week, where we're going to see in a week and a half, 2 weeks from now, expire, is a necessity in some level or another. Expanded unemployment, when we have an unemployment rate that is above 10%, because people were forced not to go back to work due to a situation beyond just that their business closed, there's no need, or just a slowdown. This was a forced closure of their business, particularly in the retail and the restaurant space. So it's something that is very important. Keep an eye on this, because the markets feel this is really important. The phased reopenings, the safe phased reopenings, and a vaccine are the two most important parts, aside from stimulus from the Fed or the monetary, the fiscal stimulus from, which is probably up next, when we're hearing about a $1.3 trillion potential, which is going to be used for infrastructure, hospital states, and expansion of unemployment benefits. All right, so what else is going on? There was a pretty big rotation last week. We saw this, and we've been seeing this on and off, not really kind of on a consistent basis. Well, 1 week here, 1 week there. But big tech was sold off pretty well. On the other side, we saw banks and value and leisure stocks bought for the week. A lot of catch-up that needs to be done here if we're going to see that there is the ability for value to catch up. The spread on value to growth is enormous. Just this year. Forget about over the last couple of years. Just this year, it's amazing. Let me give you a couple of examples to show you what I'm talking about. The growth side of the Russell 1000 index. So 500 stocks that are considered the growth stocks, approximately, and 500 stocks are considered the value stocks. In the largest of the market cap stocks in the Russell 3000. So the Russell 1000 is the top 1000 in overall market cap, and the Russell 2000 is the 2000 smaller stocks in there. There's some mid-cap things in like that too. But let's just focus on the Russell 1000. It is up on the growth side of it, those 500 stocks, on average or on a market cap weighted basis, 14% for the year. The value side of that same Russell 1000, those 500 stocks that are considered to be value, are down 14% for this year. The Russell 1000 Small Cap Growth Index is flat for the year. The Russell 2000 Small Cap Value is down 23%. So let's just go back for a second. On the Russell 1000, we're seeing that there is a 28%. I mean, just unbelievable. 28% differential spread between value and growth. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary. So, yeah, it looks like that some value and rotation potential is there. There looks like that there is some relative value when it comes to looking at the opportunity to rotate into value over growth. And growth has been on fire because it's really the only place that's making any money right now. But what will it take to see this rotation? Well, it's what we saw this week, right? The idea that there's a vaccination out there, a vaccine that could come to market, the potential hope for a vaccine that will come to market. We'll see some information on Monday. And that would be a reason to overweight value. Perhaps this week's results that trounced growth. I mean, value really just soared past growth this week. In fact, growth was down this week. Value was up nicely. Is because of the announcement we saw from Moderna and people thinking that, you know what, these other areas that are seeing significant amount of stretched valuations from a PE and a PEG ratio basis, maybe it makes sense. Maybe if, in fact, there is going to be some kind of vaccine as we get closer and closer to that potential, maybe we should start thinking about, look at this differential and this reversion to the mean trade, which is often seen over time, is going to start playing. And the catch-up, this differential of 28% spread, wow. Maybe something to consider. So that, I think that's a really important issue right now. And I would just start looking at that. We've been overweight value for a while. We still have growth, but we've slightly been overweighting that in our portfolios, thinking that if markets did in fact have some, well, I would say a correction, that value would play out better. It has not. Now, it's hurt us a little bit, but not terribly, because we still hold the growth side. Again, back to our 1 foot in, 1 foot out. We're not going to just totally throw away one area in favor of the other. We're going to kind of slide back and forth. But as this spread has gotten worse and worse, it makes us even more, you know, crazy as it may be, it makes us more embroiled in the fact that there is a relative value trade and a potential for this reversion to the mean that will be substantial. And we're seeing that here and there. But I think it's going to take getting back to quote unquote normal for us really to see that in a much more sustained manner. Not just 1 week and then it falls down. Then another week and it falls down. It's going to have to be something that is going to be sustained over time. So this week we finished up on our quarterly commentary and I thought I would take you through it, especially for listeners who have never seen it or read it. Each quarter we cover different areas and usually focus on some of the items that we are looking at, whether it's looking at a reflection of what's gone on recently or possibly even what's happening outward and what we are looking at, what we're studying, what we're researching. So this quarter, we focused on the market, the dislocation of some of the market, and also looked at different kinds of bear markets and why that the one that we're seeing right now could be the best kind if history is any guide. So let me take you through the discussion. And the first one we entitled Market Test Positive for Steroids. So what we know is that there was this magnificent run for markets, right? We gained back much of what we had lost over that March quarter. And the rebuilding process has been pretty swift. At times, it's been pretty powerful. And to the credit of some areas of the market, we saw that much of the work of this upswing was done by companies that hold the greatest weight in key indices. So let's take a look at the NASDAQ 1000, and that's probably the best example of this. And what we know now is we have this post-pandemic trade, and companies have become beneficiaries of this shift, this work-from-home shift. And they have been, incredibly in favor. And a lot of these companies reside within the technology sector and have been thriving. And they were even thriving and doing well before the COVID-19 outbreak, before anybody even heard about the idea of a pandemic or a virus. Because the advancements in technology had really pushed many of these companies up with their latest and greatest innovations. And, well, consumers have become much more reliant on technology for all sorts of things. You just think about it. All the different things that possibly can be streamlined with the use of technology. So we know that. That's nothing new. We know what's going on with the companies like Google and IBM to a degree, and Apple and Microsoft and Netflix, and the list goes on and on and on, and Teladoc and all that, right? So as the lockdown happened, the stay-at-home orders were issued, many of these top names that were already gaining in market share, went into absolute overdrive. The names we just talked about, the Amazons, everybody was buying things from their app rather than going shopping, and Microsoft, everybody's using Teams and Skype, right? Google, well, of course, because of advertising online. Apple, of course, very well positioned going into this whole, these were all well positioned. They didn't know it. Did they even think of this? Probably not. Did they have a team somewhere that said, well, what happens if? Maybe. But it wasn't like they did anything very substantial to plan. It's not like they said, okay, we're rolling out our virus program. No. It's just they were in the right place, the right time. It's what we need, what we needed, what we do need for the future. Now, getting back to this NASDAQ 100 for a second, this is a market cap weighted index. And we know what that means, right? It's the largest market value of a company, holds the biggest positions in the index. So trillion-dollar companies will hold a disproportionately large weighting. So, right? We know that. We know that we've seen this, and it's getting more and more top-heavy. So Apple right now has 11.8% overall weighting, Microsoft 11.6, Amazon 11.1, Facebook 4.2, Google, when you combine them together, 7.4. So, the Google Alphabet, both share classes. So when you look at this and you really think about what I just said, these five companies together, they account for about 46% of the market, of the index, of the S&P, the NASDAQ 100. These top companies are 46% of the index. That's what I was trying to say. Since they've already performed well and into this, and they're growing, and it's just become that much more top-heavy before this and during the pandemic, what happened is it has skewed the index return significantly in favor of how these companies are doing. And we know these companies, those companies I just mentioned, are doing pretty darn good this year. Apple's up 27% in 2020 through the end of June. Microsoft up 30%. Amazon, 60%. Facebook, 18%. So it's no wonder if 46% of the index weighting, of the index weighting and the returns of that index are going to be swayed by those companies that the NASDAQ 100 ETF, the Qs, are up just about 20%, maybe 17% right now, but through the end of June, it was 20%. So we see the similar situation. We talked about this with the S&P 500. To a lesser degree, but still it's there. Those same stocks have dominated the NASDAQ, are also high in the list of the S&P 500, which is also market cap weighted. And what we know from this is while there is a major recovery from the losses in, what was it, March 23rd, not all stocks have seen a similar trajectory. And it's kind of masking it. The large indices are close to break even for the year. The Russell 2000 is down about 14, 15% for the year. And yes, what we're seeing now is a bear market. It's the first time in over 10 years that we have observed both an economic contraction and, well, a market correction of this magnitude, right? We didn't see anything like this. We saw some things, you know, over the years in 2011. We saw something in 2019 at the end of 2018 at the end of the year, of course. But nothing like what we saw in February through March of this year. That magnitude of that loss. It's normal. We get these every once in a while. For those of you that are new to this, yeah, we get these every once in a while. Maybe not this fast, maybe not this quick of a move down and a recovery, but it is the natural cycle for whatever the reason is. This one happens to be a strange one, right? This pandemic. But it happens to be a natural part of the cycle from peak to trough, from trough to peak of economics, and from market rallies to sell-offs, corrections, and then total bear markets. And it happens. It's natural the market corrects. It's natural the economy slows. But bear markets, like we saw, or even economic downturns that we have seen in the past are not equal. They're not all the same. In fact, history has shown us that, I would say that market corrections and economic recessions, or at least economic cycles, come in many different sizes, many different flavors, and each one of them has their own peculiarities. There's a lot of different reasons as to why it got started, or maybe, you know, what was the straw that broke the camel's back, right? You know, what was the reason why, in fact, we started to see this downturn or a move up and, you know, going back to a growth cycle? If we look at all the past occurrences of market breakdowns, I think that we could probably segregate them and put them into three distinct categories. So we talk about when the markets start to get into corrective mode and then something much more severe, right? Not just, oh, there was a 5% move down, a 6% move down, just a natural breathing and consolidation of the market. No, I'm talking about a much bigger issue, right? When we are starting to see things really fall apart. So there's three different categories of these, we'll call them potential bear markets for lack of a better discussion, right? First, there's structural. And essentially, this is a result of, well, a major player in the markets, or maybe even a sector, causing a systemic problem. Maybe it could be over-leveraged banks. It could be consumers that are spending outside their means, overly debt-ridden, too much housing costs. And probably if you think about when was that? Well, it was 2008, 2009, when the financial crisis hit. We can probably put that in the structural category. Now, the next type is cyclical. Now, cyclical comes in, it's a kind of a different situation because it's more natural. It's more holistic, if you will, where we see a slowdown in economic activity after a period of growing production, you know, an expansion, profitability. Probably the 1980s would be the best example of this type of downturn. If you remember back then, we saw a decade or so of sustained inflation, and the Federal Reserve came in and said, okay, we're going to break the back of this, and raised interest rates to like 20%, pushing the economy right into a recession. And that combination of high inflation and slower growth that now was happening, which is known as stagflation, by the way, was a factor behind the market drop of 27% and 21 months of economic sluggishness. So the Fed came in and really pounced on it and said, you know what, we're not putting up with this inflation anymore. And that was really a problem. It was maybe done for the right reasons according to plan, but it was not well received by the markets, just kind of in the opposite of what we see now, right? We have a deflationary environment, very low interest rates, and stocks do well. Now, the final type of bear market action, maybe recessionary, whatever you want to call it, but you know, when things don't go well and things start to really cascade, is probably best described as event-driven or market disaster, economic disaster, something. For example, you may have seen and recall long-term capital management, where there was a major disruption, or maybe it was the Asian bond crisis. You know, these are very distinct economic disasters or event-driven. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now, right? It has the way to describe this would be like unpredictable shock to the market, maybe a horrible natural disaster, a tornado that sweeps across the entire country, or maybe a health crisis like a pandemic. Now, this kind of thing that we've seen before is usually because it is unexpected. There's no way to plan for this, right? There's no way to plan for aliens coming out and occupying the earth. Things would get a little bit crazy with the markets and the economy. It's not like you would have said, oh, well, things are slowing down and, you know, I'm seeing that the sky is turning colors and maybe there's something happened and boom. No, we didn't get it. No, with the alien concept, we didn't get any notification ahead of time. War. Again, war that's sudden. Natural disaster, health crisis. And these are usually the worst and the best, kind of all rolled up into one. And the reason for that is that again, nobody saw it coming. Nobody could plan for it. And in this situation of a natural disaster or the current case of the pandemic, what happens is it causes a lot of instantaneous uncertainty, creating a significant amount of market volatility due to this uncertainty. So we have structural, cyclical, and we'll call it event-driven. You can imagine all the different ones over time. Now, will there be a different characterization of this in the future, of something that we can see that would be different? Possibly. But right now, let's focus in on what is happening now. And the one we have right now, this event-driven, while it is one of the worst because it's unpredictable and creates the greatest consternation and uncertainty and market volatility, in a way, it's also one of the best types because the deep market corrections are often a temporary condition. The initial shock hits the markets hard, but it's usually over faster than any of the other types of bear markets, these other ones that I mentioned here, because what happens is they're viewed as temporary. And additionally, the event-driven disasters, even though they have the ability to turn into a structural breakdown, and you know, because as the economy slows and we get the growth of the event, the disaster, if there is not enough fiscal and monetary support, well, the market and the economy is very susceptible to a massive problem causing a downward spiral. And this is why there was such a quick action by the Fed and the U.S. government, and why it was coordinated to come in and rescue the economy so quickly. Now, there's no real rule or book as to the length or depth of the damage that spins off any of these economic storms. We just don't have any idea how far governments are going to go, right, to put in stimulus into the economy and to provide supportive measures for whether it's unemployment or, you know, states or the country at large. However, we do have some historical precedent as to the average declines for some of these stock markets and the recoveries and the months and the pain that will be there and how long it's going to last. At the same time, there's only a handful of bear markets in history that we really can get this data from. But the notion that the event-driven bear market can recover quicker than, let's say, structural bear markets makes sense, right? The average, on average, the historical time from the lows back to the highs have been 15 months. 15 months. And with the current market that we're seeing right now, the NASDAQ did less than 3 months. The S&P is still working on getting back to its previous highs that achieved back in February, and the Russell is had a long way to go. But you look at some of these charts and you see that the average decline for a structural bear market is 57%. That takes upwards of 111 months to recover, and it's 42 months in duration, whereas an event-driven, the average decline is 29%. The average length is about 9 months and takes about 15 months to get total recovery of the whole process. So if you look at and you say, well, what kind of bear market is it and how bad is it? Well, you got to maybe think that, well, if I had to choose, this would be the one. Now, I know, obviously, these are averages. This time is different. Yeah, it's a pandemic, but is it different than any other event-driven situation that has happened in the past? I don't know. Now, obviously, the pandemic needs to get resolved before consumers and investors can really regain their confidence in both the economy, the stocks. It seems that everybody has confidence already anyway. But the recession that we find ourselves in, pretty much just like every recession of the past, feels like the worst one ever. Now, this one is particularly harsh because it's not choices. You know, you may have a situation in the past where maybe a small business was staying open. And what happened was that they just wanted to buck the trend. They used their personal assets. They figured out a way and they just needed to stick to it and stay with it. And things got better. However, in this situation, they're forced to close. So it's different. And even as the stock market and the economy have dislocated a little bit and there's an unbelievable amount of economic pain, and it's really widespread, it's far-reaching. You know, we got the job losses and business closings, just the tip of the problems that, unfortunately, millions and millions of people are dealing with every day. But as investors, we know that, I would say eventually is probably the best way to describe when. Well, we know we're going to see a market downturn. We know we're going to see a market rally. We know we're going to see an economic event. And as individuals and consumers, we also have a great deal of evidence from the past that shows us that periods of recessions typically, they don't last that long. And the stock market has a way of recovering over the long haul. That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be fun going through it, because don't forget, going through it is where the problem is. You know, listen, think about when, I don't know, maybe you broke your arm. It hurt like hell to begin with, right? And then over time, kind of heals. And then 10 years later, you're like, I don't even remember breaking my arm. I kind of remember there was a little pain there. Maybe I remember the cast. But if we want to have a cup full, halfway full, a full cup approach, right, where we see it as half full versus half empty, we can see that on average, expansions last close to three times as long as recessions. So as long as your risk tolerance is matched to your appropriate time frame, so that means, no, you're not 80 years old with a super aggressive portfolio. That just doesn't make sense. And you're not a 22-year-old all in cash. Because if you pick it and match it and do it right, there's a good chance that over time, you're going to have a much greater chance of being involved in an expansion over time. Now, that does not negate what's going on right now. I am not saying that, hey, you know what? Throw it all in because what the hell? It always is good over time. That's not what I'm saying. Nope. What I'm saying is that realize that there are market downturns, as bizarre as what is going on right now is with regard to this pandemic, the separation and dislocation with the economy and the markets. And on top of that, what valuations are and the stimulus, and then the pandemic itself. I mean, all these things wrapped up into a crazy giant ball. But realize, if it's not this, next time it's going to be something else. Whether it's the long-term capital management debacle, it's the Asian bond crisis, whether it is a war, whether it is a financial breakdown crisis, or the dot-com bubble, Y2K problems. Something. It's going to be something. So realize that. It's inevitable. But that doesn't mean you have to preclude yourself and be scared. One of the greatest ways to create wealth, one of the greatest ways, is in a capitalistic environment, investing in good quality companies or sectors around the world. I'm telling you all this because if you really look at the history of what we see and where we are now, it's very tough when you're involved in it to see through it. I'm having a tough time understanding how we get beyond this pandemic. Because even if there's mask wearing and all these things that are talked about and all this, and we have to, it seems to me, that in order to get past it, in a way that we can go out and feel comfortable again, we have to eradicate it. That seems like the only logical conclusion to me. If we keep on going in and out of these lockdowns or phased openings and then rollbacks, that is not a big confidence booster by any means. And if, in fact, we continue to have splashed across every single headline, news item, special report, newspaper, television, all about the case count as a stock ticker, that's not going to help with confidence either. So I think what we have to do is get to a point that we have a realization that these things happen and differentiate what's happening from right now, that what we're standing inside of, involved in, and very difficult to see beyond, and take a moment and say, well, let's think about the future. Because if we don't get rid of this thing, it's going to be bad for everybody. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we're going to find a way to get beyond this. And as such, all this excess stimulus in the market should help to normalize things, at least for a time in which companies can get back on the road to profitability. And that's what's going on right now. That's why the markets are up, because that's the thinking. I still think we have a valuation problem. There's no question about that. I don't think you should be substantially allocated to areas in the markets that are their valuation to stretch beyond any normal level, because if in fact we are in a situational, or as we've discussed, an event-driven kind of environment for the markets and the economy, then if you think about it, they will resolve, and therefore the Fed and all the things that they've done are going to come back. So you have to think about this as one of those times that maybe we should be careful and be smart about our investing, especially during an event-driven type of market correction. So that kind of rounds up what we talked about this quarter in the plus we put a lot of other charts and things that we've been talking about historically, but that gives you a really good insight into what we've been talking about this quarter in our economic commentary. Listen, if you want some help with your investments, that's what we're here for. You can contact me very easily. Send me an email. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew. Send in a note. We're here to help. You can write me an email, info@horowitzco.com, horowitzco.com. Anyway, you know how to get in touch with me. Listen, that's what we're here for. If you're confused, if you're worried, if you're anxious, if you don't know what to do, if you're stuck, let me help. We'll do a good job for you. With that, we're going to sign off today, and let's see what happens next week with this AstraZeneca news. It's going to be kind of interesting. And, of course, DH Unplugged on Tuesday nights. The Monday pop-up Q&A webinar that we do is also still going strong. I mentioned this back in, I think, March or April, that, you know, as long as we have a lot of interest on this and we're helping out people, we're there asking you to join us and have your questions ready, whatever your questions may be in the area of finance and markets and the economy and money. And it's been an incredible, incredible turnout. So if you want to join us, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com as a way to register for that. On Mondays, we do a quick webinar, and you are able to ask any questions that you want. We're going to continue this as long as there's interest on it. And I thought we were kind of going to go through, I don't know, March, April, May. But it's been going on and strong. So get over to that. See you on Monday talking about that. And thank you for joining me. Be safe. Be safe. Be healthy. And the best to you and your family. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.